You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and or a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services at walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to this week's Castrol Motorsport News podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here is what is making news. The Australian circuit racing season is officially underway with Simmons Plains hosting the Race Tasmania event last weekend. The three TCR Australia wins were split between teenager Jay Hansen, who looks like he's about 15, Jordan Cox and Zach Suter. In the Australian Drivers' Championship, Tim Macro took an early gold star lead after winning the feature race. Joey Mawson won the first race of the weekend but got tangled up with teammate Tim Slade in race two, which was won by S5000 debutant Josh Fife. And in Trams Am, it was two wins to Tim Brook and one to Nathan Hearn. In supercars, we have a date for the potential revival of the Adelaide 500, which will be held on December 1-4 this year as the 2022 season finale if the Labor Party wins the upcoming state election. Erebus Motorsport has retained Jack Perkins and David Russell as its Bathurst co-drivers. They will partner Will Brown and Brody Kostecki respectively. Tickford has also confirmed that Zach Best will drive for them at Bathurst this year, although it's not yet clear with which of the team's four primary drivers he will be paired with. Supercar's newest team, Premier Racing, will sit out the all-in preseason test for the Queensland-based teams later this week and will instead test next week. We have some interesting news regarding that team coming up later in the pod, as well as a chat with owner Peter Zibaras. Team 18's team manager Steve Henderson looks to have parted ways with the squad amid an engineering shuffle there. Matt Stone Racing has unveiled two truck assists back to Holden's for Jack LeBrock and Todd Hazelwood for the upcoming campaign. And ground has broken on a new $30 million drag racing facility at the Ben Motorsport Park. Joining me this week to discuss all that and much, much more is a teammate who I would never, ever tip off the road at Turn 2 at Simmons Plains, Stefan Bartholomeus. Stefan, how good is it to have racing back?
Fantastic. Obviously, a fair bit of news going about as well. One thing that you didn't cover off there, the track action for the weekend really started on Friday out at Wanneroo Raceway. I believe there was a high-profile member of the Supercars paddock spotted doing laps in a Formula Ford. He didn't give any interviews, but he was heard talking about the time he outqualified Daniel Ricciardo some years back. Do you have any more on that story?
Well, look, it's my favourite topic, so I'm happy to bring it up. Yeah, I did a couple little sneaky laps on the short circuit. You know what's it's a shame they don't use it for racing much because I haven't driven on the short circuit at Wanneroo for a very long time, and it's a fun little layout. But anyway, I might have been doing an observed license test. Maybe there's a bit more racing on the horizon. Who knows, Steph? And I'll leave that one for you to chase up.
The fact that you rang me on Friday as you were driving out there complaining about the fact you had to go and do these laps in a Formo Ford, I was like, not only is he the racing driver of this pod, but he's the prima donna racing driver of this podcast. Unbelievable.
It was hot. I was sweating before I could even get in the car. We're in the middle of a heat wave over here. Anyway, we've had our first look at the Stan Sport coverage for the Speed Series, not the Super Series, the Speed Series. What did you make of it all, Stefan?
I ended up watching the Saturday on Nine Gem. Obviously, it's a simulcast of what they were running on Stan anyway, just with some ads in it. And then the Sunday, I watched it via Stan, but on delay. So I sort of got a little bit of what the product's all about. I think overall, like, it did what it said on the tin. Like, clearly not quite the budget of a full supercars spec production, but, you know, Matt White, I feel like, gives it good. He's got good presence, good credibility straight up, and clearly the commentary lineup is a pretty known quantity. So overall, I mean, Stan is pretty similar experience to KO, really. It's not revolutionarily different to that. If anything, the app on Stan felt a little less clunky to me. KO can run into some dramas. And it, one of the good things, actually, is that on Sunday there, the Stan app had the individual races for S5000, TCR, and Trans Am cut into individual sort of little packets. So you didn't have to scroll through like the 10-hour. We've all done the 10-hour KO scrub trying to find something in that when you're watching it back later on. So, you know, overall, I think that part of it was a win. I mean, whether it's worth $20 a month is totally up to the individual, but seemed like a reasonable first up effort.
Yeah, it definitely just had a sort of very familiar feel to it, which I guess makes sense with, you know, the fact, as you said, it's produced by Supercars Media. There was a lot of carryover from talent from the previous ARG broadcast. So, yeah, look, I think it was all, you know, like you say, it was what you sort of would expect it to be. What about the racing itself? What caught your eye across the weekend?
Well, unfortunately, the long safety cars and time certain finishes pretty much plagued almost every race. And there's sort of two parts to it. One, it reminds you how good the driving standards are in supercars. I mean, essentially, this level of racing is still amateur sport, if not semi-pro. So, I mean, Trans Am in particular, like, it promised so much. It's a mouth-watering grid, but it's mainly, you know, very young guys learning their way and gentlemen races. So the fact those cars are really hard to drive is a recipe for accidents. The second part of all that, unfortunately, is that some of the car recoveries were really long, which extended those safety cars out. Clearly, that part of those events is not quite at the level that supercars is at.
It was kind of, there was an issue. It speaks more to the first part of what you were saying there about driving standards and stuff, but that was definitely kind of an issue during the Super Bathurst at the end of last year as well, where a lot of the particularly S5000 races were heavily affected by safety cars, but some of those other categories as well. I always just find it hard watching TCR, like, the racing is good, but it's so hard to sort of get a read on exactly who's doing a good job or who's got the rub of the BOP green at any given track on any given weekend and all that sort of stuff. So it can sort of be a difficult series to sit down and go, oh, wow, that was a remarkable performance from driver A and driver B was absolutely nowhere. But there's a couple of interesting talking points. I mean, the James Moffat-Jay Hansen clash in race two was definitely an interesting one. Moff looked pretty peeved off as he walked back to the garage, had a little Barney with Melbourne Performance Centre boss Troy Russell. Was Moff right to be annoyed there, Stefan, or did Jay have the right to try and squeeze through that sort of slightly open door that I think it was Will Brown had actually sort of opened by passing Moff?
Any driver in Moff's shoes there, I think, would have been pretty pissed with the fact that they'd been deposited into the wall. But, like, looking at it from the outside, like, my read on it was pretty 50-50. I mean, you can see why young Hansen would do that. Like, it's a sprint race, reverse top 10 grid, no pit stops. If there's a gap where you can try to follow the car through that's already passed Moff there, as you say, that was Will Brown. Like, you can't really blame him from having a go, and he was a fair way up when the first part of the contact happened. So it was just a shame that the consequence there for a permanent racetrack, the wall is actually quite close. So the consequence is really big. So, yeah, it was one of those things. I mean, the bloke who probably did pull his nose out just in time was pit reporter Chris Stubbs when he went to interview Moff straight afterwards, because he was a braver man than I attempting that straight away.
Yes, an angry Moff is a is a pretty frightening prospect for any journalist in the paddock. Now, Stefan, as a proud South Aussie, all of this Adelaide talk in the Supercars paddock must be getting you pretty fired up. Opposition leader Peter Malinauskas, I think I've pronounced that right, has vowed that the Adelaide 500 will be back this year if he wins at the polls. Pre-election polling tends to be pretty ropey generally, but the betting market has the Liberals just a tiny bit ahead. So it's definitely pretty close. Like, what do you reckon? Could this be the golden ticket to get Big Pete across the line?
He's definitely gone big on it. It's kind of a bold move, because as much as it's an absolute no-brainer for us, that it's a brilliant policy, and there's lots of supercars and motorsport fans across Australia that are really hoping this happens. It's always been a bit divisive, especially there, people living in the east end of Adelaide with setting up that track. So he's gone hard on it. As a opposition leader, it's been hard in a pandemic to, have strong policies that will win you an election when the pandemic there's been managed reasonably well. So one thing that I think it's also a bit of a tricky spot for supercars with this stuff, because, like, you want your race back, but you don't really need to get involved like too hard on a political debate and an election. That's sort of my view on it. So they had that event there on Friday where Malinauskas announced this plan to bring it back in 2022. And I mean, to be quite honest, like, we were talking about that on this podcast sort of Bathurst time last year, that was the plan, that if he got in.
That was your breaking news, Stefan. Don't be humble. Be humble. I'm pretty sure you broke that yarn.
Well, clearly they sort of wanted to hang on to that a bit to time the announcement in the run-up to the election. But I think having three drivers there, the South Aussie drivers, and not, say, your Shane Howard, your supercar CEO, just leaving it to them to be the voice was actually quite clever. Mm-hmm. Where it lands is still to be decided. As you say, I'm not going to pretend to be a political expert, but yeah, I did have a cheeky look at the betting markets, actually, and I see the Liberals are the favourites.
Yeah, I mean, that probably says a bit about where we sit on the in terms of our political insight. When you go, I wonder who's going to win, I better go to a betting site and have a look. But, you think about, in our little motor racing microcosm, it's this big push and this is this policy that's going to, how can it lose? But then, most of the people commenting on it won't vote in this election because they're not based in South Australia. So that's really where it's going to make the difference, obviously, is in South Australia. So be interesting. What I'm kind of interested in now is what on earth Supercars is going to do if the Liberals hold on to power. Because as you've pointed out in the past, Newcastle, this idea of a straight swap between Newcastle and Sydney for the season finale this year is a very much a less than ideal option. Because Supercars wants to open its 2023 season in Newcastle, so back-to-back Newcastles is kind of a little bit odd. The Gold Coast date is locked in for October, so, I mean, maybe we finish on the Gold Coast and we have an early finish of the season, but my understanding is that's not really a preference for Supercars either. If Newcastle gets the nod for that Winton date in May, then maybe Winton can be moved to the back end of the year. The same goes for, say, Perth, if there's concerns over the current date and the border. There's always Queensland Raceways, this kind of floating option. But like a finale at Winton or Wanneroo or QR, it's kind of not exactly Hollywood stuff. Is there any concern that there's too many of Supercars' eggs in the Adelaide basket right now, Stefan?
It's hard to fully say that without knowing everything they've got on the table. I look at a lot of this stuff through the lens of teams and stuff as well, and it feels like the perfect year to actually finish it in the last weekend of October on the Gold Coast and let these guys and girls build their Gen 3 cars and maybe run them a couple of times before they have to go racing again in 2023. So I mean, not knowing also like TV contracts and whatever, like whether there's any stipulations on that, and I'm sure clearly they like to push on with the season past the end of the footy seasons a bit longer than that, because you sort of finally get that bit of clear air. So to end it in October would be a shame from that point of view. But even with Adelaide, to be honest, like as much as I love that event and would love nothing more than to see it back, I don't know if rushing it back to suit a political agenda this quickly is actually the best thing for it. I mean, it's pretty rich to criticize an event, you know, what is it, like 9-10 months out that hasn't happened, but you just wouldn't want them to rush it back and it not to be the full deal that we've had before. You just wouldn't want it to be half-baked based on meeting a election promise rather than what's actually best for the event.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. But it's just, yeah, I can't quite get my head around where that finale might land if it doesn't happen. And, you know, as we pointed out, it's not a foregone conclusion. So it will be pretty interesting.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, what are your thoughts on Erebus's Bathurst 1000 lineup? Pretty solid call to bring Perko and D-Russ back into the fold.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty much a no-brainer. They're both quality drivers that have been there and done it before. They've both been on the podium there at Bathurst in the last 3 years. Jack, obviously, with Walkinshaw's in 2019, and then D-Russ there with Brody Kostecki last year. So, like, I know that Lee Holdsworth winning Bathurst sort of flies in the face of it, but I think year-to-year co-driver consistency is quite important in this current era where there's only one enduro, there's far less miles during the year. The only caveat probably with these guys is that you'd hope they're doing other racing during the season. That's always important, and I don't think we've seen what they're sort of planning on that front. But actually, speaking of Erebus, there's already a bit of chat about their main drivers for 2023. I found this a bit more interesting. And Barry Ryan's been out there obviously saying that they want the guys to stay, but he's sort of gone down the same path as he did with Anton in 2010, that, like, you've got to build your team such that the drivers want to stay. You can't fight for them if they've got an opportunity to go somewhere better. And he did an interview with Speed Cafe this week, where he said there's possibly Will Davison's seat at the end of the year, floating that publicly as an opportunity for either Will Brown or Brody Kostecki. I mean, the context of it was actually a bit self-deprecating in the fact that, you know, drivers might want to go to DJR instead of staying at Erebus. But what did you make of that? It's a deliberate or not, it's a great way to get into a rival's head before the start of the season.
It was, I greatly enjoyed reading those quotes because it's just, that's the sort of action that we like to see. But the funny thing is that, like, first it was Giz last year, and now it's Baz trying to get into Davo's head. Like, he just cops a bit of flack, doesn't he? Like, it's just everyone seems to be gunning for him.
Yeah, he's copping it before we've even turned a wheel this year.
I know.
And he did beat his teammate in the points last year, so he's probably wondering what he's going to do.
I wonder if Barry sort of said that without properly thinking it through, but then I think he probably knew exactly what he was saying. It was definitely, they were very, very interesting quotes. Now, as I mentioned before, there's more change coming up at Team 18. It seems that Steve Henderson, the team manager, is joining BJR-bound Phil Keed on the list of outs. Richard Holway will take over his race engineer duties on Scotty Pye's car for this season. Last year was a bit of an odd one for Team 18, I reckon, Stefan. Like, it was sort of, there was so much promise at the end of 2020, and then there were glimpses of, like, awesome speed like Darwin, but just so much inconsistency. Do you feel it's feasible for them to get back on the trajectory that they were on at the end of 2020 and kind of trouble the front runners a bit more consistently this season?
Well, it's not a bad position to be, first off, when you need to fill a race engineer slot and you can just take someone of the quality of Richard Holway off of the shelf, who's already sitting there not engineering a car when, as a lot of our listeners would know, he engineered Scafie back in the heyday at HRT and also was on the cans for Scotty McLaughlin during his rapid rise at GRM. I mean, I'm not fully across the context of some of these changes, but I'm not really surprised to see some. I mean, talked about Richard there having not been engineering a car. They had a pretty top-heavy structure of brain power for a team running two sort of customer spec cars. I mean, they're not making their own bits. So Scott Pye had that real surge in form when Phil actually went onto his car in 2020 and got those podiums, and then it went backwards last year. So that was to the outside world at least a bit unexplained. I see that Charlie has made mention of the fact that it's good that Richard's based in Melbourne, where we know Phil has been up in Queensland. So clearly there was some desire to on that front. But yeah, I mean, we're like, it's tough, isn't it? Like, are they going to win the championship this year? I don't think so. And nothing about these changes really makes me think that that's even more realistic. Can they have occasional speed, get some podiums? Of course. But I feel like these guys will see Gen 3 as their opportunity. Like, they need to get everything, all the ducks in a line, so that when that does come in 2023 and you've essentially got the same stuff, like there's so much more spec parts on those cars that you don't have to keep buying the latest upright from 888 and keep chasing. You should really have the base package, and then it's about driving it and tuning it. And that's where, yeah, I mean, if particularly Scotty Pye, if he's their guy and a great engineer on the car, yeah, we could see plenty more from them. But 2023 for me is more so than 22. Do you feel that's a fair read?
I think so, yeah. And just to circle back to the Phil Keed thing, I think that was actually sort of one of those scenarios where it actually kind of worked, like his next move worked for everybody, because I think there probably was, it was time for a change at Team 18, because clearly something somewhere wasn't quite functioning, whether it was the fact he was based more remotely or whatever. And then you've got Brad Jones Racing that needed some engineering firepower. They needed to bring someone in because Peter Vale had gone to MSR. Andrew Edwards had gone to 888. So I think that was one of those things where it was probably just, it's like a win-win situation for everybody. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. And it's always interesting with Team 18 because you've kind of got, you know, we've still got that memories of that awesome like battle between the teammates in 2020. And that always seems like there could be a bit of spice between Frosty and Scotty Pye, particularly if they start getting some results and they're both sort of bashing doors near the front of the field.
Yeah, that's a good point you make about Phil at BJR. Like, I'm excited for Bryce Forward, who's gone there when they had a bit of a empty cupboard in terms of engineers, and for him to be able to work with someone of the quality of Phil, like, that's a massive win for Bryce. So, you would hope some of this stuff actually helps everybody in the end.
Yeah, I think it will. Now, let's chat Premier Racing, and it appears that having initially been looking at Brisbane as a base, that team will join the likes of Dick Johnson Racing and Matt Stone Racing on the Gold Coast. The team owner, Peter Zibaras, our newest team owner, was kind enough to take a few minutes out of his ridiculously crazy schedule to give me an update on how the mad rush to get the team to the Sydney grid is going.
So we're still madly thrashing to put it all together. It's hard to explain. On paper, there's no way we're going to make it. But there's no other way of saying it, but we're not going to give up, and we will be there on race day. So probably the best way I can answer it.
Have you had a chance to sort of formalise how things are going to look in the relationship with 888?
So basically, we're just a 888 customer, essentially. So, you know, we've got two 888 cars. We've signed up to their data package. We use the same engine builder that they use, which is KRE. Most of our parts that we buy will be through 888. Every team has slightly different setups, depending on drivers, on race engineers, etc. So, even if you have a look at most teams, both drivers drive a slightly different car because everyone wants something slightly different.
Yeah, absolutely. You've understandably, I think, opted to push your first test back a week. Will that open the door for 888 to maybe play a bigger hands-on role in the test if they aren't focused on their cars, and maybe give you guys a bit more of a hand to get up to speed?
Yeah, so the main reason we pushed back was, one, we just needed more time to get the cars together. Second was because obviously Triple Eight would have had all their drivers and engineers and all their best at the track doing their thing. They you know, as much as they would probably help, they would only give us a limited amount of help, I would think. By pushing it back, we get a lot more access to their engineers and drivers and help. So it will help us a lot more, yes.
So there will be Triple Eight drivers on hand. Is there a chance that you might get someone to jump in a car and maybe give, you know, Chris and Gary a bit of a benchmark to work towards?
That I don't know. There's a lot of rules in supercars in what drivers can and can't do. I don't quite know what that ruling is. I don't know if that would happen or could happen. It'd be nice. To me, it's more about just making sure that our drivers and our engineers understand, and if they have questions, they can, there's Triple Eight personnel to ask questions and help us through.
So you've already decided that the team will be based in southeast Queensland. Are you any closer to having a home properly locked in?
At this stage, yeah, we're going to be more near the Gold Coast is where we're going to be.
So that's sort of a departure from the initial Brisbane thing. Have you actually found a facility that is going to be the headquarters for the team?
Yeah, we're pretty close. I'm going up probably, if it's not the end of this week, early next week to sign off. There's two or three places we're looking at, but yeah, they're all sort of up around that sort of close to Gold Coast way, basically.
It's definitely a heartland for the sport in Queensland. How are Chris and Gary feeling at the moment? Are they raring to go for the new season? I mean, all this talk about, you know, upgraded Triple Eight cars and stuff, it must be pretty exciting for them.
Yeah, look, I think we're hoping we give them the best possible crack at it. Like most drivers, if you put a driver in a car that he feels confident in, I think, and they have a good mindset, I think they'll show, you know, they'll reward us with points. So as far as that goes, we're trying to do the best we can to make them feel comfortable and make them feel that we've given them the best we can. And then it's up to basically the driver and the engineer to bring it home.
I know it's a lot of work at the moment and it probably all feels like a fairly steep mountain to climb, but, you know, how special is that moment going to be when you're actually standing on the grid at Sydney Motorsport Park with your cars sitting there ready to go racing?
Yeah, probably it's a bit of a surreal moment at the moment, but, right now it's that when you ask that question, I sort of feel excited, I feel nervous, I feel, anxiety, I suppose. I don't know, like this, we've got so much work to do in such a short time. A lot of people sort of said we couldn't do it, and I can see why they probably would say that, but I'm sort of here to prove everyone wrong, and I know we will do it.
And thanks to Peter for his time there. It's worth noting that he's not just a supercars team boss, but he runs a business as well, so he's a bloke that's well and truly under the pump. Stefan, there was some interesting stuff in there. The Gold Coast base, for one, which means that I'm guessing that some of the people working there might be neighbours of yours in where do you live? I know it's the fanciest part of the Gold Coast.
Giving away your location on a podcast seems like a recipe for disaster.
It's probably not a great idea.
We can put your home address and phone number on the socials, but we might leave me incognito. Enough people that don't like me have got my phone number already. So,
yeah, that is very true. But is it a good call to sort of target the heartland of supercars in Queensland for those guys, do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think like there's probably some part of Pete Zibris that would like it to be Sydney-based, even though it's not going down that Team Sydney brand path anymore. But clearly it was very hard for the previous incarnation of this team to get experienced supercars people in Sydney, like going out on your own like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's always been teams up here. It's either Melbourne or Southeast Queensland for supercars, apart obviously from Brad Jones Racing in Albury. So, I think for sure. I mean, we talked about it the other week that getting quality people to run your cars is the biggest thing that he's got to go and do after he's gotten the hardware upgraded from Triple Eight. So, yeah, that's a pretty important pillar in all of this.
It kind of feels like, just from when I was chatting to Peter there, that there is a desire to try and get a Triple Eight driver behind the wheel of a Premier car when they do go testing next week. Key reference issues with the rules and what primary drivers can and can't do. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, there's a neat little option with a certain seven-time series champion that's, you know, not a primary driver, which may be a little more palatable for supercars when they put to them, hey, can we stick one of these guys in the car? What do you reckon?
Yeah, like we've seen, I guess it goes back a little while now, but over the years we've seen various primary drivers jump into other teams' cars as part of technical deals and all that sort of stuff. So it sounds like an absolute no-brainer to have a Triple Eight driver do some laps in one of these Premier cars after they've had these upgrades at Triple Eight. But I did have a little look at the rules on this just to refresh, because there's a lot of testing rules to digest. And the rules say that you can have, on one of these test days, one primary driver from outside your nominated team, so one driver from outside Premier Hire Racing, do a maximum of 10 laps, or any driver who holds a relevant license can also drive the car. And there's no actual lap maximum written next to that one. So both of these require sign-off from the head of motorsport, Adrian Burgess. So I think there's probably just needs to be a conversation going on there about what they're doing and why they're doing it, because clearly it's to help a new team try to get out of the blocks. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, Jamie's in a weird position where he's seven-time champ, been a primary driver for ages until right now. So I don't think they would have written all these rules exactly with him in mind, but I think the intention is pretty obvious. Like, they're not trying to give Jamie some sneaky testing laps or whatever. So you'd hope that'd allow it for sure.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's take a look at what's happening around the world. Pascal Wehrlein took his and Porsche's first Formula E wins in Mexico, leading home teammate Andre Lotterer. Jack Miller crashed during MotoGP testing in Indonesia on Sunday during a race simulation. Paul Espargaro was fastest at that test on his Honda, ahead of reigning world champion Fabio Quartararo and Aleix Espargaro on the Aprilia. Remy Gardner was 21st fastest on the Sunday on his Tech 3 KTM. Formula 2 driver Jack Doohan has been named as part of the Alpine Formula 1 Academy, so he's following the footsteps of Oscar Piastri there. And Formula 1 launch season is now in full swing. So we've seen the livery that Red Bull will use on the RB18, although what was unveiled and what was basically a slightly modified version of the F1 show car, so we don't know too much about the RB18 yet. Red Bull's sister team AlphaTauri went with a render of its new livery on what probably doesn't look too much like the real AT03, although there was maybe some design cues in what they did there. We've seen the Aston Martin AMR22, and that was actually a real-life 2022 spec Formula One car that's even done some laps around Silverstone, so that's probably been the biggest excitement so far. And McLaren also unveiled its real MCL36, complete with a pretty snazzy orange and blue livery. Stefan, we don't know where things are going to land or what's going to play out with these new cars when they actually go racing, but what's your thought on who's winning the livery war right now?
I think Aston have rolled out pretty nicely. Like, they've brightened up the green on that car, lost the pink. It just feels very Aston, and it's the only car we've actually seen on track, as you sort of suggest there. So yeah, I think it's always good when the cars are easily distinguishable, at least in livery, from one another, if not like in the old days where you could tell one car from another if they're all painted white. So, yeah, there's obviously a lot more talk about what the shapes of the cars look like, but purely on the livery front, I reckon Aston have rolled out a beauty.
I've just got to go with McLaren. I reckon it looks pretty hot. The Red Bull and AlphaTauri look all right too. Like, the AlphaTauri sort of, if they can't run the white wheels, that livery suffers a little bit with those wheel covers. On that are sort of a darker colour, but, you know, they sort of look all right, at least in the renders. How they look on track or TV is always a bit hard to tell. I think what is really promising, and you kind of touched on it a little bit there, is that, okay, maybe not as radical a differences in the design as we've seen in the past, but at least there is some differences. If you look at the McLaren and the Aston Martin in particular, the way they've done the packaged up the rear bodywork and stuff, it's quite different. And there was a lot of talk that you know, these are the most restrictive rules we've ever had in Formula One, and would they effectively turn it into a one-make chassis class? Because there's basically not a lot of freedom in terms of design, and that could still happen in the future as guys work out what the best way to go about all this is. But, you know, for now, there's some kind of differences between the cars, which is always something I enjoy seeing. In other F1 news, there was originally plans for 6 sprint races this year, but those plans have been scrapped. We're going to have just 3 sprint races now. They're going to be the Emilia-Romagna, Austrian and Brazilian Grand Prix. And the top 8 will score points now. So it kind of puts a pretty big emphasis on getting Saturday right, because it's not just the top 3 scoring points, but the top 8 scoring points, so 8 points up for grabs. Another little change is that, and this will be one for people who love their stats and keeping things nice and organised, Aaron Noonan, the sprint winner won't be named the pole winner anymore. That will instead go to whoever was actually fastest in Friday qualifying. So Friday qualifying, that will be the pole winner, and then it's not sprint qualifying anymore. It's just called a sprint. Stefan, your thoughts on that? Is that the right move to cut back to 3 races and expand the points? Is it all a bit of a compromise? Where do you sit on it?
I'm definitely glad that it's only 3. I mean, I didn't feel like those sprint races added a lot. Like, they were largely pretty dull. And that may change with the points weighting being higher on them. But, I mean, for me, it just felt like a cynical attempt to increase audience numbers by putting more F1 action of consequence on a race weekend. And I guess, like, certainly worked in my case, because I wouldn't normally watch the Friday practice stuff. But when it's actually called qualifying, you're sort of programmed to try to keep up with it. So, yeah, I'm glad, you know, I did always like the fact that F1 was the same format every time, and it's all about building up to that Sunday Grand Prix. And I feel like this, it's a bit gimmicky and it didn't add a lot. But, yeah, clearly it's going to have a consequence on the championship now with those increased points weightings. So I'll certainly be watching it.
Yeah, it's interesting, but because if you run in, say, 3rd or 4th, how big a risk are you going to take? Because suddenly DNFing on Saturday is going to cost you a whole heap. So there's, you know, there could be an argument that there are going to be times where drivers might even be more conservative, because you've got to protect what you've got, because, you know, if you throw it off the road and your rival scores 8 points, geez, that's a big difference. So we'll see. I still like having qualifying on Friday. I actually think that's a good move, but I certainly agree on some of your other points there. Now it's time for a brand new segment, proudly powered by Castrol. This, dear listeners, is your chance to fire a question or a discussion point at myself and my teammate Stefan here. So keep an eye on the Castrol Motorsport and V8 Sleuth socials in the weeks to come, every week from now on, for call-outs. Get in touch with us. Tell us what's on your mind. This week, we're going to go with a question from Justin Welsh, who, I have to say, looking at his Instagram, looks like a pretty handy fisherman. So good job on that, Justin. He asks, with only 9 cars on the grid last weekend, will S5000 really last in Australia? And that's a great question, because it was actually something I wanted to bring up this week, because I sort of had the same thought watching a 9-car grid lining up to go racing at Simmons Plains. I love the concept of S5000. I really do, but it's just not enough cars. And we're not really seeing the category grow in any meaningful way. And I have to be honest, it's starting to feel a little bit disappointing, because I know the borders haven't helped. You know, they can't get Kiwi and other international drivers in, but I'm just not convinced that if the border was open, there'd be another 8 cars on the grid. There might be a couple, but I couldn't see it. It can't be having that big an influence on the grid size. I'm keen for your thoughts here, Stefan. Like, am I being way too harsh, or is it time to question whether this thing is working and whether it really does have a future?
The question before, and this did have a very long birth period, this S5000 class, as we all know, mm-hmm. but the question during all of that was that, like, what would its place in the landscape be? I mean, clearly at that level, it's hard to get commercial backing. Like, you're not going to have, you know, Shell and Red Bull beating down the door to throw in a few million to run some cars. So that's where it's at to start with. And then you go, well, those who can afford to buy a car, like, probably can't really drive them because they're so gnarly. It's not like a GT3 spec car. And then those who can drive them largely can't afford them. So it was probably never going to have a massive car count. Like, I'm not really surprised with where it's at, but, like, personally, and yes, there's economics behind the scenes that will ultimately determine, you know, how sustainable it really is, but it's probably the only category that can, for me, get away with having, okay, 9 cars is a little thin, but 10, 12 cars, I feel like it's such a point of difference as a spectacle that it still works. I mean, if I was organising the Gold Coast 600, which is obviously a supercars promoted event, I think I'd still want a dozen of these things there. I mean, they make such a noise. They're really like, you just have to watch, partly because they're bloody frightening. And the fact that they're a bit awkward in hand-to-hand combat in races means that I feel like if there was 20 cars, it'd just be even more carnage than we've had. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, as I say, if there's any category that can get away with 12 cars rather than 25, it's this one.
I take your point, and I really want it to work. I'm just not sure I sort of see the end game right now. I'm not sure I see the foundation of a booming category. And probably what I'm most concerned about is that, you know, if you go and look at the season opener last year, it was kind of better than it was this year in terms of the depth of talent in the field and the number of cars and all that sort of stuff. So that's not necessarily a great sign. But I'm more than happy to be proven wrong on all of that because I like the category, I like the cars, I like the people involved, and I really want it to work. But I sort of agree with Justin that I think it's a question that's worth asking.
You need to remember, though, as well, that it's part of a package of multiple categories.
Yeah.
That it adds like a bit to the show. It's not the the one and only, showstopper.
Have to be the headline.
Yeah, exactly. I think the fact that it's not solely tied to the Speed Series events, like, I'll be really interested to see what the Gold Coast grid's like, because I think it does need to be on the big show where it can entertain someone else's audience. And they'll find it quite entertaining.
And it's obviously, it's in a safe enough position in terms of, you know, we know that ARG has a history of investing in its categories to keep them going, buying TCR cars to make sure there's cars on the grid. They've obviously, you know, they're helping keep the S5000 thing going. So it's well positioned from that point of view, but it would be nice to see it eventually really stand on its own 2 feet. And yeah, I think like 15 cars, that'd be great. But I sort of feel like we're a fair way off seeing that regularly, but we'll see what the future holds. All right, it's time for our Castrol Stars of the Week. Stefan, who have you got this week, mate?
Well, out of Simmons Plains, like that race 3 winner, Zach Suter, was a great story as a privateer entry. But to be honest, there can only be sort of one nomination here, and I'm actually going to go the other way. HMO Customer Racing, which is obviously the TCR squad owned by Barry Morecambe. Clearly, their cars were very quick on the weekend. I mean, all three of their drivers ended up on the podium in at least one of the races. Pole, round win, all of that. Great, great, great. I'm sure other people are complaining about BOP or whatever. But my reason for them being the stars of the week is that their level of presentation, I felt like, at least watching on television, raised the level from what we've seen in TCR. I mean, to turn out 3 cars in those factory colours that looked red hot. They did a photo shoot just like a, you know, F1 spec or supercar spec on the Thursday that looked pretty mint as well. So I just liked the way they went about presenting their whole show, and they were quick too.
That's a good shout. I'm actually going to stick with the TCR and the Hyundai theme. Now I'm going to go, this is a kind of a partial credit star of the week, this one, because I was pretty set on it on Saturday night, and then Sunday didn't necessarily go great. So I know Brad Shields caused a bit of a ruckus when he got into Dylan O'Keefe on Sunday, but I have to say I enjoyed his work in Saturday's first TCR race. I don't know a heap about him, but he spent the race fighting over 10th place with Fabian Coulthard and Michael Caruso, two fully fledged professionals. Even if Fab's on debut there, he's a professional race car driver. And this bloke beat him. And he didn't just block. It wasn't just through mad blocking for the whole race. He was racing him, and he, you know, Fabs got past him. He got back past Fabs, and he kind of went and beat them on track. So that was pretty impressive to watch.
Well, the funny thing about that battle is that the whole time during that race, there was the talk about the battle for 10th was going to determine pole for race 2.
Yep.
So I'm sure I wasn't the only one surprised when race 2 came around and they weren't in that order. And it was actually that the race 2 grid was set on qualifying with race, set on the qualifying order with the top 10 of that reversed. And I've sort of butchered the explanation there, so sorry about that. But it does play to I actually asked like how this happened, and seemingly the sporting rules were actually written in a way that was slightly ambiguous. And not only did the commentary misunderstand them and commentate that race for 10th like it was pole, but some teams and drivers actually had thought that that was the case as well. So that was a quirky little point from the weekend.
Yeah, well, the TCR website still has a report that says that, you know, they were fighting, these guys were fighting over not just 10th, but pole position for race two. So it was certainly pretty confusing. I was also a little confused when it all didn't quite play out that way on the Sunday. So that's pretty good. Our star of the week is kind of a bit of a tear up of the week in the end. Which is fun. Anyway, look, that's enough for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, and review our work wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll be back next week with more Castrol Motorsport News.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and or a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.